ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, The Appearance of Demon Kripa Asura, text 35.
Athatatra bhavankim deva tattavap ihabhuna visarga patita bhara tantrena svakrita kushala kushalam phalam upadadhyaho svit atmarama Upashama Shivaha Samanjasa Darshana Udasta Idiha Vavana Vidavaha.
Translation. These are our inquiries. The ordinary conditioned soul is subject to material laws, and he thus receives the fruits of his actions. So here, demigods are speaking, asking a question in their prayers. So they say the ordinary conditioned soul is subject to material laws, and thus he receives the fruits of his action. Thus your lordship, like an ordinary human being, exists within this material world in a body produced by the material modes. Do you enjoy or suffer the good or bad results of actions under the influence of time, pastward, and so forth? Or, on the contrary, are you present here only as a neutral witness who is self-sufficient, free from all material desires, and always full of spiritual potency? We certainly cannot understand your actual position. Purport by His Divine Grace, S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he descends in this material world for two purposes, namely, paritranaya sadhanam vinasha chadushkritam, to relieve the devotees and kill demons or non-devotees. These two kinds of action are the same for the Absolute Truth. When the Lord comes to punish the demons, he bestows his favor upon them. And similarly, when he delivers his devotees, he gives them relief. He also bestows his favor. Thus the Lord bestows his favor equally upon the conditioned souls. When a conditioned soul gives relief to others, he acts piously. And when he gives trouble to others, he acts impious. But the Lord is neither pious nor impious. He is always full of his spiritual potency, by which he shows equal mercy to the punishable and the protectable. The Lord is apapa vibham. He is never contaminated by the reactions of so-called sinful activities. When Krishna was present on this earth, he killed many inimical non-devotees, but they all received sarupya. In other words, they return to their original spiritual bodies. One who does not know the Lord's position says that God is unkind to him, but merciful to others. Actually, the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 9:29, Samaham sarvabhuteshu name dveshyosti napriyaha. I am equal to everyone. No one is my enemy. No one is my friend. But, he also says, yeva janti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. If one becomes my devotee and fully surrenders unto me, I give him special attention. Again, the verse. These are our inquiries. The ordinary conditioned soul is subject to the material laws, and he thus receives the fruits of his actions. Thus your lordship, like an ordinary human being, exists within this material world in a body produced by the material modes. Do you enjoy or suffer the good or bad results of actions under the influence of time, past work, and so forth? Or, on the contrary, are you present here only as a neutral practice who is self-sufficient, free from all material desires, and always full of spiritual potency? We certainly cannot understand your actual position. So we see here an example of prayers in the form of question. And it seems more like a rhetorical question, because we'll see later that then was actually explained what is the position of the Lord. But it is very difficult to understand the Lord's position. That's the point of this verse. They're bewildered. That's why they ask the question. It seems like you are here and you are under the influence of material modes. It seems that you are subject to the laws of this world, the laws that you make. And indeed, we see in different pastimes when Krishna appears, especially in his incarnations as a human being, he acts like that. He is subject to the rules of this world. Sometimes, of course, he displays his influence as God and transcends all the laws of material nature. But many times we see the example that, for example, he is a subject to a curse. We know in the past times of Lord Ramachandra, for example, Mother Sita was cursed by two parents to be separated and suffer from her husband. And I think also Lord Ramachandra was cursed, I forgot. But of course, that's not the reason why they were separated, the ultimate reason, but it seems like that, that they're subject to this. And Lord Krishna was also seemingly influenced, that's what it said. He was in trouble with the story of Shyamataka Jewel. In trouble means that he was criticized. And some citizens of Varaka, they had doubts if Krishna actually, what he did with this Shyamataka Jewel, it disappeared. So that's why he had to go and fight to return it back so that he cleans his name. So he was in some trouble, and that was an inauspicious, so-called inauspicious time in his during his presence here. He was passing through a certain that's what it says. Even he is subject to the influence of the stars, and it was inauspicious, that's why he got that. It seems because he was passing through that period. And every other living entity, when passing through that period, they have to experience some troubles. That's the period of Shani, Sarasati. So we see these examples, but of course Krishna is not subject to that. But he acts, first of all, so that he shows the example. And that's even, powerful persons, they can be subject, especially when, like the story, when something happens and they are cursed. Even there was a Brahmin who cursed Lord Chaitanya to become bereft of material happiness, especially family material happiness. That's where happiness comes from, family. And it seems that Lord Chaitanya suffered from that curse, but actually he was very happy about that curse. So, that's only superficially. And then the other reason Krishna does that is just to bewilder the materialists, so that they think, oh, he's just an ordinary person. But the devotees, they are never bewildered by this. Even if they are sometimes confused, like the demigods, we see Lord Brahma, the creator, he becomes confused, especially by the form of Krishna, when he comes and he plays just like an ordinary human being. And that causes some confusion He sees Krishna as a small boy keeping sweets in his left hand. He doesn't know even which hand to eat properly. And he desires to test. And then he realizes the same with Indra. So powerful demigods, they are covered by his external potency and they don't see. But the devotees always see his actual position. Of course, when they participate in the lila, they forget about that most of the time, so that they can experience rasa, they can exchange love, intimate love with Krishna. So he, it is clear here, the demigods kind of hint, are you subject to the influence of time, to the results of good and bad work? Like all of us here in the material world, or not actually, or just a neutral witness who is self-sufficient, self-satisfied, and free of all desires, full spiritual potency. So here it is clear that the answer is yes, you are actually just a neutral witness, always self-sufficient, Atmaram. You are not subject to past work. And this is also true for devotees, as well as God. His pure devotees are never subject to good and bad works there, because they act free from that. Their actions are nishkama. They don't produce reactions. Why? Because they surrender to the Lord. They dedicate all actions to Krishna. There is no material reaction. Although in their lives also it is many times bewildering. It seems that they are suffering from their reactions and they are suffering from the influence of time. That was discussed with Bhishma Dev and Yudhishthira Maharaj. Actually asked him why this happened to us. And this is a question, why did this happen to the Pandavas, who were so dear devotees of Lord Krishna? They went through so much tribulation and suffering in their lives. And Bhishma Dev answered, yes, it is very surprising how you are the Dharma personified, you acted so piously since your birth. Actually, you should only enjoy in your life. Everything should be good because you are so pious. And not only that, more actually important is that you are always protected by the Supreme Personality of God, who is your personal friend. How is that possible that you suffered so much? And he said, the only explanation I can give is that that's how time works. That's this the influence of time in this world. Nobody can understand how things work by the providence, by the will of providence, everything happens. In other words, he says, well, actually this is happening because of Krishna's plan, and we cannot understand this plan. This is his conclusion. The only thing we can do is to accept it. We take it, yes, okay, this is happening because Krishna is giving his sanction, and we accept it. So this is, of course, a completely surrendered devotee, accepts everything as Krishna's arrangement. Doesn't mean a devotee doesn't act and doesn't plan how to act. The devotee does that, but whatever happens, the fruits and the results he gives, that's why it's called nishkama. Especially the devotees automatically do it. You may be a non-devotee, also act as a nishkama. Reject or kind of renounce your results of the action, then you won't get karma, you can get liberation. But the devotees don't, they're not concerned with that, they're just concerned with acting on behalf of Krishna, and that's automatically giving them this status. So there are many examples, of course, the Pandavas and many other devotees, they were completely surrendered, they left everything in the care of Krishna because they knew Krishna is coming here and he is protecting us. That's 100% sure. The devotee who has that faith is never, never troubled. Whatever happens. So we see devotees, they seemingly don't do much. Like, for example, Shiva's Thakur was not caring so much for maintenance of his family. And people logically went to him once and said, Shiva, why don't you find some stable occupation? You need some stable income for maintaining your family.
Get a job.
And
get a job.
Get a job. Yeah. So, the answer? The answer was three times. He clapped with us, watched him all these things. And he explained, first day, this is it. First day we don't have anything to eat, we fast. Second day we don't have anything to eat, we fast. If it doesn't come by Krishna's arrangement, Krishna, because he said, my family? This is not my family, it's Krishna's family. I'm not responsible, he is responsible. If he doesn't arrange, first day we fast, second day we fast, third day we jump into Ganges, all of us. And Lord Chaitanya started laughing then. He said, okay, then Krishna will actually take care. And also Bhakti Notakura once his wife was complaining, your daughter is now marriageable age and you don't do much, you have to do something, people will start criticizing us. And he was okay, go for that. It's your family. If they criticize me, actually they'll criticize you. So we have to do something. I'm engaged in your seva. I cannot think of this now. It's your problem. My daughter has to get married. And next day, someone came with a proposal. We have to have a nice daughter. Let's make the plans. So Krishna took care. So there are examples like that. Here the point Prabhupada mentions, that Krishna quoting Bhagavad Gita, is Samoham, Amikutvo. Na medveshyo, I don't hate anyone, I don't love anyone. And this is the same again for pure devotee. Samadarshana, that's also Krishna's statement. The devotee sees everyone equally. And that sounds a little bit cold, isn't it? Like, you don't have friends, you don't have enemies, how is that possible? You must have, otherwise there is no. Because this is the vision of a contaminated by the three modes consciousness. We cannot see the world equal, we just see it dual, we see it dhamma. In the vision of dualities, we cannot see it equal. We always have to feel something which we like and reject something we don't like. This is the nature of the mind, the material mind. Accept and reject. So we always like someone, we don't like someone. And things and persons like that. And we cannot understand how it's possible that you don't display, you're actually seeing everybody as equal. It seems like this is like indifferent, lack of feelings, emotions, you don't care about anyone. How is this possible? And Krishna, why he's like that? Or this is one extreme. He is just so impartial and he's indifferent to anyone. I mean demons blame him, why you're protecting your devotees, and some nearby devotees may say, why you're so indifferent? But again, the actual situation is the pure devotees, they understand, because for him, that's the spiritual point of view, yes, everything is equal because it's of the same nature. They see the spiritual part of each individual living entity is the same. Therefore, their attitude is the same, in a sense, they see it. But Krishna says, those who worship me, I, as Prabhupada translates, I give them special attention. So this is natural. Because when somebody approaches Krishna in a personal way, he responds. He says also in the Gita, in the way someone approaches me, in the same way I respond. So we see pure devotees, the intimate Nitya Siddha devotees, they approach Krishna with complete surrender and intense love. And Krishna is bound to respond in the same way, also with intense love. So that's his reciprocation. It's natural, it's personal. We can't find fault with that, because that's the nature of personal relationships. So because God is personal, that's how he responds. If somebody is indifferent to him, he's also indifferent. But he is like impartial judge, giving, he's made this world in such a way that automatically it's managed in a way he's not involved personally. That God is not like the idea of he created the world and now he's just busy managing personally who's getting what, and judging and sending some to hell, some to heaven. This is done automatically by his energies. Of course, that person's in control of the different energies, but he is not involved personally. But he becomes involved when the devotee surrenders, because that's what surrender means, right? There are six items of surrender, and one is the devotee says, I completely rely on your protection and your maintenance. And that means whatever happens, I trust you. You will take care. So then Krishna takes that care. If somebody comes and trusts you and puts the faith completely, then Krishna, yes, I'll take care. And what happens is that with such surrender, the devotees, they are free from their previous karma. Actually, even you don't need to be fully surrendered to be free from your karma. You just need to chant one time sincerely the name of Krishna, then there is no karma anymore from your previous sinful reactions. So the devotees, they don't have sinful reactions to suffer. That's the statement of Shastra. If somebody says no, but actually we have something that contradicts the statement of Shastra, whoever chants the name of Krishna is free from the past karma. But again, it seems that the devotees, their lives unfold in a way that's like a karmic reaction many times. So what happens, the acharyas describe, is that this is seemingly their karma. It's just similar to a karmic reaction, but it's not actually a karmic reaction. It is Krishna's arrangement, because Krishna is personally involved. It's not anymore the material nature automatically taking care of you. Good and bad deeds, like they say here, enjoying or suffering according to good and bad deeds. No, it's something which Krishna arranges. And if there is suffering, why? That's the problem. If we enjoy, then okay, Krishna is giving us good facilities and we are happy with that and we can serve without trouble. But if we face troubles and difficulties and suffering, then we become confused. And we think, well, this is my karma. Actually, yes, this is the internal feeling of a devotee. Actually, I should have suffered much more because of my karma. So I suffer much less because of Krishna's mercy. But it's not due to the karma. The suffering is to teach us something. And generally, that's the way of karma. You're supposed to learn something, but the materialists normally they don't learn. That's why they repeat the same mistakes again and again. But the devotee is supposed to learn something, so if there is some suffering, it is to correct specifically some mentality. And that's how we should see. Of course, it's not so easy to see it, especially if we're in a difficult situation, but we have to meditate in such a way and ask Krishna for intelligence to understand why the situation is happening, what is he trying to teach us in such an arrangement. And then at one point we will understand, oh, okay.
And even if you don't understand, you should go on devotional service and eventually you will understand. Srila Prabhupada said in one lecture, talking about this verse, a devotee accepts everything as Krishna's mercy, if it is favorable, if it is something which is happiness, he takes it as favorable arrangement from Krishna to serve more. And if it's something which is suffering, he also takes it like Krishna's mercy. And he said, I have this experience for my life personally. He said, Krishna, he crushed me many times. He crushed me. And I could not understand why is that happening? Why is he doing that? And he said, but now, after many, many years, now I understand. And I'm very happy that he did that to me. So this is usually, there was some months or last year, there was one case of a devotee, Prabhupada disciple. It's a long story, but he was actually attacked and almost killed him. And in Mayapur. And I had a friend of mine who spoke with him and asked him, what do you think about the whole thing now? And he said, this is the best thing that happened in my life. And he almost died. And he was cut completely everywhere. He said, this is such a profound realization I've got. It changed my view of the world. Now I can surrender much, much more. So this is devotee's take on the situation. Somebody else will say, I am here in the Holy Land, I am a proper disciple, I've been chanting for 40 years, what is this? Somebody comes and tries to kill me. What is this? I cut my finger, cut my face, my body everywhere. No. This is a humble devotee, accepts everything. And this, that's why Lord Chaitanya said this verse about chanting the proper mood of tolerance and lack of desire for honor and respect, giving respect to all others, and patience, tolerance, humility. Krishna Das Karavan Husserl says, this verse, we should take it and put it as a garland on our neck and wear it all the time. He says, I call to you, please put this verse on yourself. This is so important. And it's so difficult to live, like, to be more tolerant. What he gives in Chaitanya Charitamrita's example is the tree does not protest. That means tolerant like a tree. The tree you cut, no protest. You don't water, it may die. It doesn't ask for anything. He compares that. The devotee doesn't ask for anything. Just accept Krishna's grace. But this is the highest standard, of course. Okay, are there any questions? Comments? Yeah?
I have a few questions, but I'll just ask them one, and then somebody else has a question. You brought this. Just now, this case of this devotee who got sliced up in my book. I'm just wondering if he's been caught. I mean, the people that did that, if they've been caught and punished.
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
In the Indian way.
I know at least that most of those who attacked him were caught actually then by the locals. They kind of find all the blood and scream whatever, and maybe one hit. But they were also, they were caught, they were punished by the Indian way on the spot. But then police came, I mean, they were really beaten, but then the police came and they must be in jail. But I know that the person who hired them, he's in jail for life now. That's how I heard he got that sentence. For inciting a fight. So, that's what I know as far as I know. Maybe the Chitai problems won't be there.
Another question I have is about Krishna being influenced by Saturn during the period of the Shrinivasa jewel. I was pleased to hear it. I hadn't heard of it, but I was just wondering which Acharya said that.
I can't remember now. Reading, maybe it's probably in the commentaries. We shall check about it. I can check. I just heard it recently. Probably put it upon some devotee astrologer mentioned it to make a point about it. But I don't remember actually reading a commentary like that. Probably it's kind of.
My last question was, I missed the one you said Sita was first.
Yeah, this is, I think it's the beginning. There is a description, or maybe some Shastra connect. I think it's in Ramayana. She was a small girl, and she had two parrots caught, and she kept them. And she really wanted them to have these birds, and they were in a cage for some time. And they were not very happy about that. And then they cast her in. Or actually, I can't, I'm really bad with the details with stories. Maybe they caught one, and they were family, and then they were separated. But the reason, of course, the thing was that they were chanting the birds around, so she was very attracted, and she wanted to keep that bird. To hear about Ram again and again, and the only way was to, and so she asked, they catch, and so they caught the parrot, put it in there. But then they were separated, and I think the wife of the parrot cursed her. Now, as I suffer now from separation, you suffer from separation from your future husband, something like that. That also could be checked. If somebody knows, but I think it's from Ram. Yes.
It's quite a big point you were making in relation to the karma. That of course you understand that by initiation karma is taken away. At the same time, there is also like a general understanding amongst the devotees that when something happens to them, that some of their past karma is still being worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you made the point that. There is no question of any past karma playing still a role in what happens to us today, that it's basically the arrangement of Krishna.
Yeah, exactly. Because Krishna is taking care. It doesn't mean, his arrangement could be, yes, leave up your karma. But that's why the Acharya say this is the resemblance of karma, because it's not the automatic judgment of Maya, and then you get it. It's Krishna's sanctioning, it's Krishna's hand. It may be just your karma, but it's not a punishment because you did it, it's because of Krishna's allowing it to happen so that you learn something. Because otherwise it will be contradictory, it will be that, Shastra says when you chant all karma, it is no karma. You're freed from all karma, but then, actually something remains. Nothing remains, but it can, what remains is your prarabdha karma, definitely this part. Because if that is taken, then you have to leave your body. Yeah. And that's what Bhakti Mottaku says. So, we live with that body, that's our prarabdha karma, it's already manifested. This type of karma remains, but what is clean is the bija and kuta and all these subtle forms of karma. So they will not fructify, that's for sure. All they are burned, no seeds, no sprouting, nothing, no fruits. But the body, what's already manifested, and it will unfold, because it will, especially, for example, like chronic disease and things like that are karma, which are unfolding from our prarabdha karma, which is with that body. We were born with that. And that doesn't mean that it's not necessary to change. Why would they change? That's already the body is there. Of course, Krishna may change it if he wants, and he may not. But if he doesn't, if he leaves it like that, that's his mercy. He has a reason for that. The whole point is that he's personally involved. That's exactly what it means. I give them special attention. He becomes personally involved. So the devotee's life is not, you know, that's another point again. It doesn't mean that if you're, depends what you're doing now, you may create new karma. You are not free. It's not, doesn't mean now you are completely free from any laws. You start driving on the left side, you know, on the roads. You hit somebody in front. That's your karma. That's your stupidity. You do the wrong action, you get the result. That's very simple. What we're talking here is this past sinful reactions. They don't count. They are burned by the process of chanting and following it. Or you do not rather, you get the reaction. That's because again Krishna's arranging that if you make a promise, you have to learn that you cannot do that. If you want to really surrender and become pure devotee, you have to clean that propensity. So you're making a promise, you have to suffer. Otherwise you won't learn. That's his arrangement. He made it like that. That's a system which works always. Until you've learned. Yes.
You have explained that if we chant the mantra, so we are free of karma. I was wondering if we have to reach the Sudanan stage for this, we are free of karma, or if first stage is already free of karma.
Yeah, now pass is free. That's in Chaitanya Chaitanya. You chanted Navabhas, which was in the case of Ajamila, this Muslim who chanted it out of fear. They were not even devotees, but they chanted sincerely, without offense. That's Navabhas. And he said that's enough to liberate. Liberation means no karma. How could you otherwise be liberated if you have karma? You have to live it. That's his statement. I mean, this statement is so far out that that's why he, when he made it, Haridas Thakur, this Brahmana, Smarta Brahmana in the Sanskrit, he said, what are you talking? You know, people, yogis and jnanis and all others there, and karmis, they're trying to, you know, for, you know, hundreds and thousands of births to attain liberation, to first become free from their sinful reactions, and then to attain liberation. You just say it once, pronouncing the name without offense, you get it? That's nonsense. If it was like that, and I change, he said, I change you. I will cut your nose if it's not like that. And everybody, the devotees, and how can you say that? So they kicked him away. They fired him because he was hired by the uncle and father of Raghunatha Das Goswami. They fired him. They kicked him. But Haridas Thakur said, no, he just don't know. He don't know. He doesn't know what is the conclusion of Shastra. So then he explained. He quoted. He proved it by Shastra. And this Brahma Gopala. What did Chah? Gopala. Yeah, something. His nose fell off. Because of, yeah, this curse, it went back to him. Okay, I forgot who was.
You mentioned at least two examples of how acharyas who sort of left situations and surrendered to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the end of your class, you were saying that actually the devotees, they don't ask Krishna for anything. Yet, if you surrender to someone, he is your only shelter. So, what should you do?
Why is contradictory? That's exactly the point. They say, Krishna, you take care, I don't ask. That's the point. They don't ask because they leave it up to Krishna. But that doesn't mean they don't do their duty. They do their duty. But in that mood, or full surrender. Whatever happens, it's up to Krishna. But that's exactly, I don't ask for anything, it's your, you know, I'm yours, whoever is connected, my family or whoever depends on me, yours. And you take care, I don't ask. You know, so, again, yeah, this we see as such a related words, examples. But, you know, asking, it's if we ask Krishna as a person, as a dear friend, that's one of the items of devotion. So it depends what we ask. If we ask, give me a cover TV and a chalet next to the sea. Prabhupada says even that is okay for this to approach God as a person. But it's not devotion itself. It's not devotion.
There are examples of most elevated devotees who asked Krishna to help them out. Like, first comes to my mind, Draupadi was,
yeah,
you know, after she tried to defend herself, yeah, and things, so she could. But as far as I can understand, where distinction comes is whether they ask something, as you mentioned, for their sanctification or false prestige or something, mm-hmm, like that. Or when they come to situations where all other resources are, you know, her husband's and everybody else failed and she's struggling, she tried everything possible, then she turned to Krishna and has slipped up her hand all the way that she's calling us. I have nothing but.
Yeah, I mean, that distinction is definitely there, but also in the way it's described, it's like that she just. Is that good enough? I surrender. It's almost like I'm, you know, whatever you arrange, you know, you take care. I tried, I relied, I looked, and I asked, okay, don't, nobody did it, and I tried myself to defend, and now, okay, it's up to you. Hmm. Yeah, but it was in the mood of please help. So.
In the Krishna book, you see constantly you're always asking protection from Krishna.
Yeah.
And he loves it. And he likes it. And he's kind of, you know, I will not ask you anything. There's not a relationship, you know. But it's, he loves it. He loves, and that's also the body's likes to see what that is, you know, this Krishna's. I mean, they're asking him just, you know, to increase the pastimes. But I mean, they're definitely asking for protection, like, right? Yeah. They're running for him to help. So it's not the relationships, I'm not like, no, I'm not asking for anything. It's not kind of thing, I really can't.
Yeah, that's why we have it as I said, this few items of devotional service when you explain the Bhakti Mataku explains. A hankering. Humility, when we chant, we have this vigyati, you know, revealing the line and approaching the Lord with prayer. When we pray, usually we pray for something. So it's there as devotional service. And we say that we read that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You are told that you don't ask whatever happens. So it seems contradictory, but it's not. That's the point of the verse. It seems the opposite, but it's not. In Krishna, everything is conciliated. It's just always have these different points of view.
The thing also, like in the way of Lord Chaitanya, I was saying Krishna, Lakshana, Krishna,
yeah.
I mean, this is the example of the yogi.
Yes.
He's coming to,
yeah,
to show up to practice Krishna, and he's asking Krishna for protection.
Yeah.
So it's there, it's not Krishna conscious that asking for protection. But I guess it's not as you said, it's not a demanding, he's, you know, protecting me. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's just normal personal reciprocation. I think, you know, I'm afraid, and, you know, I'm in this material world, this world is very dangerous, it's very full of things which are in my mind, is overwhelmed by, you know, the way that things look like. And then you ask Krishna, please, you know, take care of.
Yeah. I think the point here is again in the mood and the consciousness of how much Krishna consciousness. One type of asking is, I'm here, you're there, I'm asking. from you something. And that's, it's kind of distant. It's, there is a relationship, but it's a distant. That's also what Prabhupada says, because it's you approaching God. And what we're talking is not asking means like you leave it to Krishna, which it doesn't contradict when you approach, because that approach is like everything is you, and you're taking care of the residents of Vrindavan, and whatever happens, there's some danger. Krishna, they say, there's no one else. You're all everything for us. And they just say Krishna spontaneously. They don't plan, they don't calculate, now we have to ask him so that he takes care of, protects and arranges, and then he stays away. We have our own thing, and we're happy that he took care of that. I still remember we went to one place, a religious place, and we asked them. And one question was the person who was explaining their religion, and what is your conception of God? God is there, we are here, as far as... I felt like the far away is here, that's better, you know. We take care of our business here, and he's there. And he's there just to arrange, and, you know, yes, we are asking, he's taking care, providing. In that sense, the devotees don't ask. That distant relationship, you know, they don't ask in that sense, but as Krishna becomes the only object of their love of everything, and they play naturally, that's very natural, that they always rely on him for everything. So that's why we see these different examples. Both the devotees completely, you know, surrendering, not asking, and the devotees asking in the sense of depending on him. Their dependence is part of the surrender. That's exactly the language of others. Completely dependence. And that may seem like asking, you know, but it's not yet. It's not an egoistically motivated desire. It is dependence, because this protection means you care because I'm yours. I'm serving you, and when you care, I'm yours. That's how, you know, we have in the family. That's you. That's what you feel.
I was reading, I don't remember where, but Prabhupada says Krishna wants to be merciful to someone, and he just takes everything away, and then his relatives leaves him, and he loses his things. Why? Because he wants that person to be completely dependent on him. So that is like a special mercy.
Yeah, yeah. This is a famous verse Prabhupada quoted, that Krishna, he wants to show special mercy, takes away everything. So this is like a scary verse. The more I advance, the more things will disappear from my life. And all the deers, my family members, whatever I have. Just a little bit to elaborate, we were together last month actually, at a summer camp, and Lilosha Prabhu happened to speak on a similar verse, Queen Kunti asking, that's Queen Kunti's prayer, so he was quoting that verse from 10 Canto, elaborating that actually the more you advance, the more you lose everything, and at the end you'll just be completely nishkinchan and nothing, this is the real mercy, you have nothing left. And most of the ones that we ask us, you know, they are engaged in service of Krishna, but you know, that's their perspective, you know, they have to part with everything and everybody in their life, and that's like kind of a gloomy picture. And Prabhupada Maharaj commented, he said, well, this is Krishna is arranging that usually just when it's necessary to help someone surrender. After one surrenders, there's no need. And you see, you know, he provides for everything, whatever is necessary. It doesn't mean he always take away everything. He will provide. That's the example of the devotees. And actually, you know, because we have a picture of we become completely poor and destitute, we don't see, he said, we see maybe one devotee example was very poor and remained poor. That's like Kala Chashida, that was probably arranged by Lord Chaitanya just to show an example that even small pure devotee can be a pure devotee. But most of the devotees were quite okay, and even like Sudama people, you know, he specifically gave him so much love because he was attached to poverty. That's the opposite thing. But it's there, you know, property, as Prabhupada said that this is showing mercy. If we are losing something to which we are materially attached, Krishna makes us surrender in this way. If we are able to take it otherwise, then okay.
It's interesting because, like, in the case of Prabhupada, Rajagana was telling you, you're the most wealthy. I know that you're the most wealthy. So it's interesting because actually Krishna considered that to be wealth. I mean, his consciousness was his wealth. Mm. So yeah. It's not that Krishna takes everything, he doesn't take credit the future to him. He's giving away wealth.
Yeah.
When he's giving material wealth.
I was wondering, if you want to, like, you're serving Krishna, but you want to do some other things as well. How do you know if it's Krishna's plan or not? Or sometimes, you know, you have to just take action and then you can see if it's Krishna's plan. Or, you know, sometimes it's hard. You want to make a step, you want to do something, and you're not sure if you can do it because maybe it's Krishna's plan, maybe it's not, and then you get confused.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, then how to see what's the Lord's plan is so easy to see. After that, when you to foresee from what he wants, then usually we try to find out by consulting with Shastra, with Sadhu, with Guru, and with him. We ask him directly, what's your plan? Can you inspire me? So Prabhupada says he gives us intelligence usually. But even with the example of Prabhupada, many times we see he adjusted. First of all, he started in India, didn't work somehow with movement, but he had a plan. And he said he didn't go to UK, he went to America, he started one thing, but maybe it didn't work, so then he changed. So we see the devotee is trying to follow the order and parampara, and then acting in the best of the capacity, and see if what's Krishna's plan, it kind of manifests. So yeah, it's not easy to understand what Krishna's desire, but in general we can have an idea, more or less in general, what Krishna wants, because we know more or less what Prabhupada asked us. And according to our situation, you know, social situation and spiritual, in terms of our national occupation and our situation, then we arrange our duties. That means this kind of duties we follow. What exactly and how, you know, that's why we have intelligence, we use it. And then we accept whatever arrangements happen, that's Krishna's sanctioning. It doesn't mean that things are predestined or whatever happens, I just leave it and, things, we have a free will, we choose things, like you say, we may serve them, but we may want to do something else also. So then, of course, the more we do something which is independent, the more it becomes under the, you know, how things will unfold according to the reactions of what we are doing at the moment. But if we rely on Krishna, just sacrifice, okay, Krishna, I'm doing it, but the result I leave to you, that is accepting Krishna's plan. Means leaving it. But just one example, short also, a devotee, friend of mine is fond of saying, well, whatever, you know, they're in charge of running a quite serious operation, and you know, it's a management of people and things like that, and okay, whatever, Krishna, it's Jagannath's plan, whatever happens, it's kind of, Krishna has a plan. And his guru came, how is God? Well, Jagannath. Jagannath has a plan. And he said, well, Krishna wants first to hear your plan, and then you'll make adjustments. It doesn't relieve us from the responsibility of thinking, making plans, and working. But in the mood of that, it depends on Krishna. We're just doing it. We're doing our best, and he arranges the rest. Okay?
If there is some space for one more question.
Yeah.
When it comes to this prarabdha karma, so there's one verse of Bhagavad Gita, 4:19. When it's understood to be in full knowledge, is every endeavor is devoid of desire or sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reaction of work had been burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. So this seems to be like the devotee was kind of understood his Siddha Swarup. So then all of his karma is gone. But that's how I understand this verse from Prabhupada's perfect also. But you said you just sent one sufficient and all karma is gone.
Yeah, that's all the chances. Yeah. I just quote it.
Okay.
This is a verse from many, in a few times, yeah, in the Quran. But I don't think this verse refers to the Siddha Swarup. Krishna doesn't talk about this type of knowledge. He talks about transcendental knowledge of realizing he was a soul. That doesn't refer to your relationship with Krishna in particular, whether you know it or not. If you realize you're a soul, you have transcendental knowledge. That burns the karma. Also.
Explaining the purpose, he's saying it is to be understood that he has burned up the reactions of his work by perfect knowledge of his constitutional position as the eternal servitude of his spiritual
life. Doesn't mean that constitutional position is our servant. Doesn't refer to your swarup or whatever. Okay, your swarup is always a servant, that's the constitutional position. Doesn't mean necessarily only those who know completely the details of their relationship, they don't come.
Okay, so you just need to understand Amitabha, so even if it's theoretical,
yeah.
then
if it's theoretical, that's another thing. If you completely realize it, then your Brahma realizes your free Makana. This chapter is talking about the process of obtaining transcendental knowledge, this is Gyanima. You can become free from karma in that way, you can be free from karma through yoga also. But in the devotional process, you become free from karma by devotional practices like hearing and chanting. They are much more potent for the other needs many lifetimes. That was the point of this Brahma, many lifetimes for Gyanis, yogis, and the others to attain that. So much hard work. And you say that just by once chanting, even inattentively, it means like without intention that you're chanting the Lord's name, if it's just namabhas, you get rid of all karma? Impossible. And he proved it. This is the conclusion of Shastra. That's the power of the name. And you should have faith in that. In the words of Shastra. That's what he said. Thank you very much.